Buck, and you're listening to the Heavy Hole Podcast. My co-host this evening, it's just Tom. Tom's back again. What's up, Tom?
Hey. Hello, Will.
There he is.
Thanks again for having me down here from sunny Savannah.
Whew. Yeah. Tom's been threatening to not edit the episodes unless he gets a more voice time on this. This is all a... He's holding the podcast hostage.
I need to publish my voice more frequently. I've been missing it. I'm not doing roast mortem anymore. I'm just sitting around with my ass up my ass. And I need to do something.
He pointed it out to me that it's actually in my contract that I signed. Man, I thought I was signing a contract to like have a Bandcamp page for the podcast. And it turned out Tom tricked me into all sorts of legalese stuff. It was wild.
Yeah, it's like I get to ruin one in every 10 episodes. It's in the contract, and that's the verbiage too. Ruin.
That's the reason why I'm in three death metal bands at all times. It's only to promote the podcast for Tom. It's wild. Tom, in your megalomaniacal takeover of my baby, the Heavy Hole Podcast, what else has been going on in your life, you know, that you're kind of using as a front to act like you're not doing that?
Oh, my goodness. I've been eating vegan for a week now, and I gotta say, I don't like it. I'm just doing it as an experiment. There's no promise. I'm not doing this for any moral reason. It's for gut reasons. I'm just kind of resetting myself. And I don't know how people eat like this.
Gut, like your gut. We're not talking about the band gut.
No, yeah, right? my gut. Okay. Only audible when I have gas problems.
There's certain words that trigger death metal and gore grind conversations for me. Like gut is one of them. I apologize. No, I salute you. That's good. I would even, you know, I would think about doing that myself one day if I have the will and the fortitude.
It's been 52 days since I drank last.
Jeez. Again, I kind of feel like I'm being attacked here. I don't
I'm going to slip all these things that I think you're doing wrong with your life in these episodes, and you're gonna hate me.
You also think I need to read more? Is that gonna come up again?
Yeah, it's gonna just keep. It's coming up.
Oh God! I'm trying here, man. I've been reading a lot. I've been reading the back of this. This alleged medical marijuana package. No, come on, enough with that, man.
I like it. Speaking of marijuana, what is this shirt you're wearing? You're wearing like the Grimace of Marijuana shirt, like that.
This
color
is kind of a... It's like a meta thing I'm doing. This is a green Carhartt long sleeve, but I'm wearing it as a statement to profess my love of the band Cannabis Corpse.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like, because I know Phil from Cannabis Corpse is kind of a working class, outdoorsy guy.
Yeah.
Right? Am I wrong? Like, so it's like a bright, like a Carhartt shirt that's so green it's almost hard to look at. Like, right. It reminds me of weed. It reminds me of Cannabis Corpse's catalog. Shout to them.
Did I ever tell you that I had the opportunity to be Nugman one time?
I was there, sir.
Were you? I was drunk. I was.
Yeah, that was at St. Vitus.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, we attended a show together.
Yeah.
And I looked to my left, I looked to my right to say, hey, Tom, isn't this Cannabis Corpse band awesome? And then you were nowhere to be seen. This supernatural nug creature is flying around the mosh pit, arms flailing, getting tossed everywhere, and you're nowhere to be. I'm looking for. I'm like, where's Tom? I got to show Tom this thing that came out. And then, lo and behold, on the ride home, you revealed your secret to me that you are the Nug Man, allegedly.
Yeah, man. So I won't do that again, though.
Why not?
It was hard. That was probably the hardest trip into a pit I've ever visited. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, that suit is heavy, man. It's made by, like, some of the people on the Guar team. It's no joke. It's very heavy. It helped me with taking punches to the abdomen. I didn't feel those so much, but moving it was just so... Oh, my gosh. I felt like RoboCop, but without any guns.
Were you wearing this in some sort of like tournament fighting game? Like, who was punching you while you were wearing this?
I was in a pit. People just like punching the idiot in the suit. So that was me.
Wow, man. Jeez. Tom, I think we need to talk off air about this. We may need to get a lawyer or somebody involved in this. Another elusive entity behind a mask. We're going to talk to Baby Chico Records right now. Buckle up, tough guy. Big Will from the Heavy Hole Podcast, and I'm here with Brian from Baby Chico Records. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you for your time.
Yo, thanks for having me on, Will. I'm happy we could finally make this happen.
Of course, man. You've been a great local support to me and some of my friends the last few years as you've kind of built your label and your reputation promoting and booking shows, man. So it's a little overdue. Before we get into all that stuff and we talk about what might potentially be going down this year, I'm going to start where I always start. Are you from a musical family? And just in your case with what you do, I'm going to ask this too, is art, anything of an experimental nature or something, or the idea of running a label and being behind the scenes, any of that go back to childhood, members of your family or someone older in your life that steered you that direction?
Yeah, so no one in my family is musical in the sense of like playing an instrument or being in bands or anything like that. My dad is a pretty big music nerd, though. His kind of band of choice growing up was the Allman Brothers and all that kind of like Southern rock meets jam band kind of stuff. So there was a lot of that in the house growing up. But he just kind of is open to pretty much everything. So I was just constantly hearing stuff. His coworkers would always burn him CDs back in the 90s and stuff. So whenever he was like picking me up from school or driving me to wherever, there was a new mix of CDs happening in there. So that kind of opened my mind to discovering just a bunch of cool music that isn't necessarily on the radio. Then aside from that, I had an older cousin, he's still around. He was into a lot of like, you know, Death and Obituary and Typo Negative and Metal Church and all that kind of stuff. And I remember always being into the shirts before even like listening to any of those bands. I would see those shirts and be like, oh man, like the Leprosy shirt and being like, man, that's fucking cool. So like, I never really put it together that I could go out and find that music. But once I did find that music, I'm like, oh shit, I remember that album cover.
Yeah, I it's funny because that album cover in particular, when I was a kid getting into the underground stuff around 13, 14, Adam Rotella of Anal Birth, he had Death's Leprosy, the vinyl framed in his, you know, his teenage bedroom. And I remember always seeing that artwork before I had heard the album. It made a big impression on me, too.
That classic Repka stuff.
Yeah, man. All right, so that kind of gives you a basis. You're obviously like open-minded towards music. I imagine you. Well, here's another thing that occurred to me before. What you do now with Baby Chico Records definitely leans into noisecore, power violence, the more experimental edges of maybe like the grindcore and hardcore scenes. You know, I don't want to pigeonhole you here, but. Coming up on Long Island, you're from a different generation than me. I remember when I was in the 90s, a teenager with Adam Rotella, it seemed like Adam and I, and it was only because Adam got us into it. Like, Adam was the only one that really was like a bridge to the noise scene and the more experimental fringes of stuff. And he got, you know, us into it because he knew about it. For you, how do you go down that wormhole? Because a lot of people in your position growing up on Long Island would be very content to just stick to Internal Bleeding, all due respect to them. You know what I mean? I want to find out where the noise comes in and all that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Internal Bleeding are also the fucking goats.
Yeah.
So shout out to
them.
Yeah,
not taking anything away from them. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So I kind of, growing up, I was more so involved on like an online space more so than like a local regional scene. I had insane anxiety as a kid, so, and like all of my immediate close friends are normies, for lack of a better term. Like, I'm the only one listening to anything remotely heavy. Like, I got one friend, James, who he's into like boomer thrash, for lack of a better term, like, you know, Metallica and Slayer, Anthrax, Big Four stuff. I'll occasionally turn them on to some newer stuff. But like, aside from that, it's pretty much just me doing my own thing. And I don't have any like older siblings, and all my immediate family are like way older than me. So I was just kind of left to my own devices to kind of figure this shit out on my own. So it just kind of, it was like the drug addict effect where it was like, okay, I'd go on YouTube and go on these weird little rabbit holes, and it'd be the recommended videos on the sideline. And it's like, okay, I'm listening to Slayer and all that shit. And then it's like, oh, okay. There's Infest No Man's Slave on the right hand side with the album cover of the Vietnamese guy with the duct tape on his face. I'm like, this is crazy. I'm like, okay, the first song plays. I'm like, wait, it's 30 seconds long. That's it. And immediately I'm like, fuck, this is awesome. Like, I was a very, very hyperactive kid, very short attention span. So that stuff immediately grabbed onto me. And then that goes into like, at the time, more relevant stuff like Weekend Nachos, Trash Talk, Ceremony. All that kind of shit. And then it's just like, oh, okay, that stops being the new and exciting thing. And it's like, what's the next heaviest thing after that? And then it's like, oh, okay, oh, there's this guy called Merzbow. And the Pulse Demon album cover immediately is like, oh, this is fucking crazy. Then you listen to it, you're like, wow, who the fuck listens to this? And then you keep coming back to it. And then you're like, oh, okay, I can listen to a whole song of this now. Then it's like, fuck, you're listening to the entire album. And now you're like, fuck, I think I like this. I think I'm just into it. And it just is that constant pursuit of like the more and more extreme, weirder, fringer shit.
Slayer to Infest is a sick pipeline.
Oh, yeah.
I think I got into each band into completely independent of one another, man. I'm just picturing going from Slayer to Infest. That's awesome. I might want to listen to both bands back to back now. But I heard what you said, man. And yeah, I kind of remember getting into Merzbow because they collaborated with Gorby on Necropsy at one point, who was a little bit more of an accessible band in the grind scene at that time. And Relapse was pushing Merzbow and I think Masana. Like at one point, Relapse had, it might have been called Release, I think, or so. It was another side label that was like more of the experimental and harsh noise and all that sort of thing. So you get into Merzbow. I mean, I know I've always had an eye on that scene, I'll say. I might have a few random, experimental noise tapes or CDs behind me here, but obviously it's not really like my whole thing. I do know enough about it to know that packaging and like unique design in the packaging is a big part of that subculture. When do you kind of catch on to that, and when does it come out of the internet for you in terms of like actually going through the underground labels and ordering some of these things and, getting into that part of it?
Right, so I started buying records when I was like 13. I would go to Looney Tunes. Shout out Looney Tunes, West
Yes,
Babylon.
yes.
So I would go and get my haircut at a place that was around the corner from there. And being 13, so I grew up in Bayshore. So it was like, I couldn't ride my bike that far. So like my mom would have to drive me there. And there was a Marshall's right there. And being a Long Island mom, she loves a good bargain shopping at Marshall's. So she'd be like, okay, I'm going to drive you to get your haircut and I'm going to go to Marshall's while you're doing this. And of course, she's never there to pick me up. She's still shopping. I'm like, fuck, I guess I'm going to Looney Tunes. So I'd
Yeah.
walk over to Looney Tunes and just, bruise through the used bin. And like at that time, I wasn't really into like that crazy shit. So I would pick up like, old Judas Priest stuff, some like Quiet Riot and stuff like that. And I even have a turntable. It was just kind of like, oh, I like music. This is a music thing that I could buy. So I just kind of amassed this interesting little collection from that. It wasn't until like college that I actually like bought a turntable. And then through there, it was like, oh, you can just buy the shit on the internet. So it was just kind of reaching out and like buying the physical thing. Like I remember buying Jane Doe by Converge and getting it, and it's the gatefold and it has the 12-page booklet in it and all that shit. And it really, something about that really struck me. Where it was like, oh, okay, there's a whole art form that goes into us aside from just the music itself. And I just have a collector's mindset in general. And that it just scratches that part of my brain where it's like, oh, okay, obviously the most common thing now is all the variants and all the different color vinyl and all that shit. But I don't know. I just really appreciate when people go the extra mile and do some crazier shit with it. Like right behind me in this video right now is that Penis Geyser tape behind me that my buddy Colton put out. It's in a fucking can and you got to crack open the can to get the tape. Like just shit like that where it's like, fuck yeah, that's awesome. Like I love doing that shit. So that kind of becomes an art form in itself for me and this whole appreciative thing. And that has helped me discover new music that I haven't normally wanted to check out on my own.
You know, that is true. What you made, you know, and my own bands do. It's very common. I mean, you know, the variants, the color, the limited edition color vinyl, and all. You know, all my bands have that. You know, it's part of like record collecting now. But in a way, it is very. It's almost assembly line in itself, as cool as some of those splatter color vinyls can be. You know, they're like that's kind of, you know, what you're talking about with the can. And I've seen some other stuff that really goes outside the box with the experimental noise scene, whatever you want to call it, power electronics. I know there, you know, I'm going to step over my words a little bit with people who are a lot more familiar with these subgenres than I am right now. So, when do you start going to shows? And do you start going to like, I mean, based on, you know, what you do with Baby Chico Records, I'm painting you in the noise and noisecore scene. Do you have like a more typical underground trajectory where you're going to Long Island hardcore and death metal shows as well? And then eventually you kind of find your way into where these artists are performing as well, you know, that you're working with.
Right. Yeah, I got an interesting little trajectory with all this shit as to like how I ended up where I am now. Like I said before, I had like really bad anxiety as a kid growing up, like social anxiety, just general anxiety in general. And that kind of impeded on my ability to go to shows, which, you know, like I said, none of my friends were into this shit. So the thought of like, okay, I'm going to the show by myself. I don't know anyone. I'm just gonna sit in the back the whole time. Like that would freak me out like fucking crazy. So my first real like hardcore show, I guess you could say, I went with my dad because I was like 14 or so. It was DRI at the Gramercy,
That's
and
cool.
I
That's cool.
needed, yeah, it was fucking sick, and I needed to have an adult with me because it was like 16 and under, you need an adult, whatever. So he comes with me, and you know, he's not really like a hardcore dude at all. Like he appreciates all that stuff. Like I turn him on to the shit all the time, and he loves it. But like growing up, like I said, he was an Allman Brothers guy. So he's, you know, he's sitting in the back, you know, the Gramercy, like he's sitting in the seats. He's got like a Heineken in his hand, just like watching this little like dickhead son bounce around, little toothpick getting thrown around by these like 40, 50-year-old dudes. And, you know, that was the first like actual hardcore show that I went to. I'll never forget, I wore a bootleg Dealing With It shirt and I met the band afterwards. And Spike was like, "Where the fuck did you get that?"
That's
Like I
awesome.
didn't piece it together that maybe the band isn't the one selling this shirt that I got off of some eBay seller from Slovakia or wherever the fuck. But yeah, so that was the first like actual kind of hardcore show that I went to. And then from there, like I don't know, there's gonna be a running theme of me not really piecing shit together. Like I didn't get that there were shows happening on Long Island until I was in like college. So for the most part, I would have to go into the city for the shows. Like I would go to the Gramercy, like I just said, like Terminal 5. I saw a couple shows at the Garden, Nassau Coliseum. I saw, what the fuck did they call it? It was the Jägermeister tour, which was just Slayer, Megadeth, and Anthrax, and like all these shows. My dad just came with me, it was just because I couldn't really find anyone else to fucking go with. But yeah, around college age, I started kind of like breaking out of my shell a little bit and like overcoming a lot of like the mental health stuff I was going through. And I would just slowly start going to shows. I went to school in Tampa, so I was hitting shows like the Orpheum and Crowbar, like occasionally going to the Cuban Club and all that stuff. And like kind of forcing myself to be social and forcing myself to overcome doing all this shit. And it, you know, when I came back from college, it was just kind of like, all right, going to Revolution like once a month or so, but still kind of having these like hurdles of like being scared to say hi to people that I see there a lot and all that shit. So it really wasn't until like post-COVID that I was like, you know what, fuck it. Like I had a lot of life changes that were happening around that time. I was just like, you know what, I'm just gonna go to every fucking show that I can. I was at AMH like every weekend. And if I saw like the same people multiple times, I'll just kind of go up and introduce myself and be like, "Hey, what's up? I'm Brian," and like blah, blah, blah. And I'm very happy that I did because I've met so many awesome people. Like our little scene here is so cool. And that was kind of the start of Baby Chico in a weird way.
Yeah, a lot there, man. And I appreciate you being so candid with us. It sounds a little, you know, coming from me, because like I do this podcast, like people might see me as very outgoing in a way. I'm also 42 years old. I've had a very long time to become comfortable in my skin and comfortable with what I do in the scene. And I have a very strong network of friends in the underground community because I've stuck with death metal so long. But I know what it's like, especially when you're younger, when I was in my teens, to have social anxiety and be very unsure of yourself at these shows when there's, adults, middle-aged men at shows, and you're just a teenager, that sort of thing. I can kind of remember that. But as I grew older, I did realize, typically speaking, you're always going to have, you know, problems and assholes, but typically speaking, at these underground metal shows, people are very forgiving and accepting, and a lot of time you're interacting with people who are kind of your own ilk. I'm from Huntington, they're from Levittown, but we were both kind of like the weird kids in our high school, that type of vibe. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and the good thing about this scene is there's a built-in kind of like icebreaker in the form of shirts. You can just be like, "Hey, nice shirt, man."
Yeah.
And then it's conversation started right there.
Yeah, definitely. Now let me ask you this, man, since you've been so open about it. Do you feel like going to shows, the draw of the music, you have a passion for the music, you want to see the artists live, and you're kind of trying to overcome your anxiety so you can go do that and experience it. You talked to us about how you basically said fuck it and you put yourself out there despite overcoming this anxiety about it. Do you feel that in some way, like the music scene, going to these shows, being part of that, has helped you like overall with the anxiety and other areas of your life? You know, like that's kind of like your practice run for other areas of your life where it's not about noise and metal and stuff.
Oh, for sure, yeah, and it's definitely like. I think it is, especially with hardcore metal and all that stuff, you're not just kind of like standing there watching the music. You're moving around all that stuff. You have to put yourself out there a step further if you want to be moshing and hardcore dancing and all that stuff. And that immediate, like, that's another layer to it as well. So you're double putting yourself out there type thing. And it is like, I still kind of, I'll go to shows and the first time before I start swinging or pushing or whatever the hell I'm doing at these gigs, like I still get anxious going into shows and doing all that stuff, but it's less and less every time. And I'm 29 now. I'm definitely not as in my head about shit as I was when I was like 13, when I was first getting into all this stuff. But there's a lot of stuff outside of shows and all that stuff too, that definitely helped with all that stuff.
Yeah. I feel like I'll just say that I feel I can relate in a way with coming of age in the underground metal scene, and that a lot of my longtime friendships now are part of that, and that kind of extends my self-confidence and my social personality, even at my day job or with family and stuff. It's such a part of your personality after a while, man. So you mentioned before about your dad taking you to shows. That's something that comes up a lot. I remember times in my life when my mom would drop me off at shows back in the day. We did a whole I believe we called it All Ages with Bill and Chris, if I'm not mistaken, a while back. Shout out to Bill and Chris, father-son team that frequent metal shows and support my projects here. And we had a long discussion with them. So that's not such an unusual thing to hear. What I do want to hear, what was your father's reaction? You said he was into Allman Brothers. So what's your father's reaction to like DRI? And did you ever have your father take you to like an experimental noise show?
Yeah. So he's very open-minded when it comes to music and just any sort of art in general. Like I'll send him just noise stuff now and he'll be like, oh, okay. Like it's not my thing, but I get why people like it. Like I remember showing him like Despise You and Crossed Out and all that shit. Yeah. And he's like, oh yeah, this is awesome. But it's just stuff that's not really in his world that much. And he appreciates it, like being let into that world, if that makes any sense. Like, I remember he was the one who took me to that Slayer show at Nassau Coliseum. And he was just having a fucking ball. He was having more fun than I was, just because he was like kind of sightseeing and being like, oh, look at that drunk idiot over there. Like, oh, look at these guys moshing over here and all that stuff. Like he was just happy to be there. But it is funny because like I was born in 94. So right when all that grunge stuff was happening, because he was raising me, he wasn't really paying attention to the music that was happening there. He has since become a huge, like, Rage Against the Machine fan and Soundgarden fan. And, you know, he was always into Nirvana, but just because that was just on the radio all the time. But, like, he has since started getting to, like, Bleach and some of their deeper cuts and all that shit. Like, he drives around for work a lot, and he has Sirius XM Lithium on just on repeat. So he's just always listening to that grungier stuff. And because of that, I'm just constantly sending him new stuff. Like, I sent him the new Fleshwater album when it came out. I was like, this seems right up your alley. And, like, he was playing that on repeat for a while. He's very, like, he was also kind of like a wound up person for a while. So he has since taken up, like, meditation and all that kind of stuff. So, like, I'll send him a lot of ambient stuff, like, you know, Tim Hecker, all that kind of stuff, Ryan Eno. And he latches onto that stuff just as well. So he's just very appreciative of any sort of music that I send him.
Cool, man. That's great to hear, man. What, now, did you ever participate in making noise or being part of a band or anything prior to making the label?
I was in the high school marching band. That is the end of my musical expertise there. No, that was something like, obviously, when you're a kid and you're like, oh, I want to learn how to play guitar and all that shit. And then I'm like, oh, playing guitar is hard. So I gave that up very, very fast.
Yeah.
And it's something where it's like, you know, noise. It was something where I'm like, I'm cool with just being a fan of this. Like, I'm cool with just being on this side of the music, you know, like maybe one day, like I do get the itching every once in a while, like to get like a pitch shifter or something and do some like gore noise stuff and whatever. But, you know, going back to the anxiety thing, I have really bad stage fright. So if I do end up doing something, it will just be a bedroom project. But yeah, that kind of dampens a lot of the appeal of performing music for me.
Fair enough, man. And that's the origins of Gore Noise, is literally bedroom projects, man. So that's,
oh, for sure,
taking it back to the roots. All right, so let's talk about Baby Chico Records a little bit. You started in what, around summer 2022?
Yeah, I think it was March or April of 2022.
Take me through then. Curating some of the first few releases and bands, were they all people you had heard of, or were there some people that maybe answered your kind of call on social media when you first started the label?
Yeah, so the second, I'm going off of catalog numbers right now, which, as you're probably well aware of, that doesn't necessarily correlate to actual timelines.
Yeah.
Number two, which was technically my first release, was a 4-inch lathe by Sidetracked, which is a legendary kind of start-stop power violence, borderline noisecore project. Jay, the main guy behind that project, he's a fucking animal, man. Like, at any given moment, he's got like anywhere from 5 to 15, probably even more, releases just in the chamber. And I was just such a fan of his output. And I reached out to him before the label even started, like before I even had a name or anything like that. I just reached out to him and I was like, hey, like, I'm a huge Sidetracked fan. I'm thinking about starting a label. If I do, I want to put out a 4-inch, because all of his releases are like 2 or 3 minutes long. So I was like, listen, like, I think it'd be funny to make it on the smallest possible lathe that I can at the time that I can make. And he immediately was down for it, which, shout out to Jay. He's the fucking man. Like, he didn't have to like respond to this loser that didn't have anything or any sort of credentials, whatever. And he was super professional about the whole thing. Like, a week later, he had the whole layout and like all the songs and everything. It was like, bam, here you go. So I put that into production. Number three was the Calloused Minds demo, which, how that came about was, I was at a show that Sam from Bowel Erosion and Stabbed and Black Earth had booked. It was Deterioration at Shakers on Easter Sunday. And as you can imagine, it's Easter Sunday, so everyone's with their family. Yeah. And so at the time, Calloused Minds was called Child Bride. And it was supposed to be like a one show, call it quits type thing. And they're very like mid 2010s era Power Violence. So they're not really like the Slap-A-Ham, like early 90s shit. It's more like, you know, the stuff that was on To Live a Lie and like later era 625 and all that kind of shit. And it's just pure water torture worship. And I immediately was like, yo, this shit rules. And I went up to Doug and Nick after the set, and I was like, yo, I'm starting this label. Or like, at that point, I think the label was already like technically started, but I was like, this is exactly up the alley of what I want to put out. Like, I want to do something with you guys. Like, let me put out your demo. And they're like, nah, like, we're calling it quits after the show. And I was like, listen, like, just think about it and just let me know. And they talked about it, and they eventually got back to me. They said they were down for it. They re-recorded their demo, and sent it over to me. And I was able to put that out as a lathe last year. And then number four was supposed to be a Targeted promo, which, for those who don't know, Targeted is a beatdown band on Long Island, featuring members of Bowel Erosion and Stabbed and that whole incestuous family of Long Island bands.
Probably and members of Exsanguinated, you could say then too.
Yes, definitely. And yeah, that kind of just fell apart, as shit kind of does from time to time. But yeah, we're talking about doing something else with that. So I'm reserving that catalog number for some sort of Targeted project in the future. It's just a question of what it will be and when it will come out.
Okay, man. So that's some of your early releases. Well, for that 4-inch, I can't even pronounce it right, 4-inch lathe?
Yeah, lathe. Yeah, all right. They take a lathe machine and carve the grooves into a piece of plexiglass.
How did you find the manufacturer to make that? And was it a pain in the process because you wanted such a small one?
No, so that is my buddy Zach. Shout out Zach over at Precarian Cuts. He is in Arizona. I forget the exact city, but he's in Arizona, and that's just kind of what he does on the side. He makes all these kind of small run lathe cuts for bands. A lot of them are like experimental bands or like hardcore death metal, like all these kind of like DIY scenes where, you know, like with vinyl, because it's in such big demand right now, it's super fucking expensive to make. And the downside is you have to make like 200 copies minimum, but just because of the cost of setting up the machines and all the labor that goes into it and all that stuff. So how they make a lathe cut is, you know, with vinyl, they make the stampers and just mass press them. With lathe cuts, they take a piece of plexiglass and carve the grooves by hand. So that allows you to do smaller runs. So the cost per unit is a little higher, but you're able to only order like, you know, 25 if you want to. So that's perfect for what I'm trying to do. And my buddy Travis, who runs Damien Records, he does a lot of lathes. And that's kind of how I got introduced to that as an option. And, you know, as a new label, I didn't want to drop like $2,500 into pressing a record that may or may not sell. Like, I got to make a name for myself on top of selling these records. So it just didn't really make sense to do that at the time. So I think I did like 80 copies, 75 or something like that, and just put in the order. And within a couple of weeks, I had them at my door, and they sold pretty fast. But yeah, that's just a nice option out there for people like myself or like bands who don't really have the financial capabilities to put in a full vinyl order.
Fair enough, man. And I want to get into, since we're still kind of in the early days of your label, I definitely want to talk about some of your later and more recent releases, but that kind of coincides that era with Barely Breathing Fest 1, right?
Yeah.
So if you could take me back, you know, I've known John from Syruphead for a long time. He was one of my first guests, I think, on the podcast, like the first year we did it. He's John Santiago from Syruphead. That was probably within the first dozen episodes, I want to say. I'd have to go back and look. But I had him on the podcast way back in the day. Got to get him back on in the future. And I've known him for many, many years through Buckshot Facelift shows and all this sort of thing. Tell me about meeting him, because if I'm not mistaken, he's a big collaborator with the Barely Breathing Fest. And then maybe how the Barely Breathing Fest comes from, you know, the conceptual to actual.
Yeah, so Barely Breathing was actually John's idea pre-COVID. It was supposed to be just him doing it. I think it was some of the Bowel guys as well, but in terms of like creating, like coming up with the idea and all that stuff, it was mostly John doing that. And then, you know, COVID happens obviously, and no shows are happening. And then post-COVID, he wanted to start it up again. I had not met him at this point. I did not know there was someone on Long Island even doing grindcore. I just kind of like, up until that point, accepted like, oh, Long Island is hardcore and slam leaning death metal, and that's just what is out here. And I just have to accept the fact that there is no scene for the shit that I'm like mostly into here.
I remember the feeling. I remember that feeling back in the day.
Oh yeah, for sure. But yeah, so I met John through the Bowel guys, because the front man of Bowel, who has talked my ear off about not mentioning his name, so I'm gonna not do that. it was supposed to be him and John doing Barely Breathing, and we were just talking bands, all that stuff. And he was like, "Yo, we're trying to bring Sulfuric Quarry out to Long Island, and Isaac is a madman." So I fucking love that band. I love everything that Blast Attic puts out. So I was like, "Oh hell yeah!" Like, how could I help with this? You know, I will do whatever I can to help you guys and all that shit. And I met John shortly after. And that first year of Barely Breathing, it came together in like 2 months or something crazy like that. Like, I still don't know how we ended up pulling it off at the end. But yeah, point of that whole rambling being, it is that's all John's baby. I just kind of hopped on the tail end of it and helped him out with it. And yeah, I'm just very thankful that he continues to want to work with me with all that stuff, because it has kind of become this weirdo little fest that, you know, people still ask me about. Like, the day after last year ended, people were still like, "All right, when are you doing, you know, what are the dates for the third year? Are you doing blah blah blah? Can you put my band on?" All that stuff. But yeah, it really is cool to see how big it's gotten.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, John, I know when John has his determination and will, and he puts his mind to something, how he can be with you know, putting on shows and putting out all of his releases and everything like that, man. He is prolific over the years, I guess is the word I would use for all the things he's put out, all the cassette tapes and all these crazy little releases. And he got very into the strange packaging that goes along with a lot of this stuff too. Your label complements his work very well in turn, like you said, on Long Island, you don't really expect this type of thing to pop up. Maybe now I think there's more people around that are supporting it or are into it. You know, the internet obviously exposes gives these bands a lot more exposure nowadays. You know, that gave Anal Birth a whole nother life now in this generation. So I don't know. I guess what I'm getting at is when you start putting this stuff out, do you start like you put on the Barely Breathing Fest? Do you feel in a way like by creating that space that you maybe even surprised yourself? Like there were more people that would support that out here on Long Island than you thought, or is it like you still think that we have room to build? I'm just trying to gauge, like, did the Barely Breathing Fest change your perception of that, of if Long Island is just a slam metal place?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It is interesting, like the Anal Birth record release show that we did recently. It's really interesting seeing all these like young kids showing up there. Like, I'm looking at these kids, I'm like, you're definitely still in high school and you're going to an Anal Birth record release show. Like, I didn't even know that was a thing when I was that young, you know? But that whole kind of younger generation, the whole like Bad Idea Collective and all that stuff, like they're kind of those guys and other people that age in out on Long Island right now, they're kind of like showing out to more and more weird shit. And it's fucking awesome to see. And also from like a band perspective, a lot of the bands that have played Barely Breathing or some other Barely Breathing affiliated thing that either myself or John has put on since the fest, they've all come out and been like, "Yo, like we're just playing Long Island from now on. Like we're not playing New York City, we're not playing Brooklyn." Just because they're like, "All right, it's the same thing that we've been saying for years," where it's like you go to a show in Manhattan or Brooklyn or wherever, and it's just people standing around with their arms crossed and they're too cool for the room and no one wants to mosh and it's just all the shit. But you come to Long Island and there's people beating the shit out of each other. And if on both levels, that's really, really cool to see. So, you know, recently we had the Bowel Erosion record release show that myself and Black Earth put on. We had Putrescine and Entrail Asphyxiation, who were touring together, along with Kidnapped from Connecticut and Hospital Bomber, which they're from Long Island. But it was a Wednesday night, and there was like 60, 70 people in Shakers, like throwing the fuck down. And that's something where it's like, oh my God, like you're going to a Gorgoron show on a Wednesday and it's fucking packed. Like we're in an interesting spot on the island right now where there is a little bit more for shit outside of just the usual neglect worship stuff happening.
You're absolutely right. There's a lot. The younger generation, I've been repeating myself a lot over the last few years on this podcast, but the younger generation really is bringing a lot to the table in terms of the scene and making it so there's a space for some of us who've been waiting around for many years for this type of music to maybe have a broader audience and some more support and actual venues putting on shows out here on Long Island. So it's great. Shout to Brooklyn, by the way. I love you guys out there.
Yeah, fucking listen, Brooklyn's awesome, but they have a little bit of reputation of not moving.
Yeah,
and also come the fuck out to Long Island for a show, man. Like we go out there all the time.
It's nothing personal. I just don't like sitting in traffic for 2 hours on the LIE and then trying to find parking for 20 minutes. Like, I go to Brooklyn when I have to, but Long Island having a scene is also very enticing when you live out here. That's all.
Oh, for sure.
Fair enough, man. So Barely Breathing One. And then maybe, I want to talk Barely Breathing too, you're obviously you did that Anal Birth show, but tell me a little bit more about some of the other stuff that you've put out. I know, you start dealing with the band, again, I hope I pronounced it. Is it Giallo or is it Giallo? Oh,
it's Giallo. Yeah.
Giallo. Yeah.
After the, Italian, horror movie director.
I know that, so it's like I'm double ignorant for not knowing how to pronounce it, because I used to work at the CineMart Center in Huntington, and they played those films. But regardless, tell me when you start working about with Giallo. I'm getting the impression from your social media that this band is fairly significant for the label.
Yeah, so I'm a big Youth Attack Records fan, like all that kind of mysterious guy hardcore. Like I fucking love Cult Ritual. I love Cadaver Dog. Vile Gash. I love all that shit. And that was kind of the flavor of the month, I guess, for lack of a better term, for when I was like really getting into hardcore when I was in college. And especially going to school in Tampa, Cult Ritual is from Tampa. So like, I was just like kind of more so familiar with them there. And then, that stuff was kind of happening a little bit more after that, but it's not really that big anymore. So they put out a demo, which ended up being the 7-inch that myself and Damien Records put out. It was initially a tape through Practice Hatred Records and a lathe cut through Damien, and it just instantly sold out. Like it just kind of blew the fuck up, and I don't think anyone was really expecting it. And that was something where Travis from Damien Records was talking to me. He was like, hey, like, we got to collaborate on something. And he's like, I have a feeling that this band Giallo from my hometown is going to blow up. I'm doing a lathe with them. If it sells out fast enough to justify doing a vinyl pressing, would you be down for it? And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Like, I could probably swing that. Up until that point, I'd only done tapes and lathes. So I just, for my own selfish reasons, I wanted to put out a record to say that I did a piece of vinyl. And they dropped the lathe, and no joke, 30 seconds later, it was sold out. Like it flew so fast. Like I wasn't able to get one from the site. Like it sold out before I was able to buy one.
Wow.
And and it was just one of those like, well, I guess we're doing this record. And, it was just in production for a while. And they're such a fucking good live band, man. Like the energy that they bring is absurd. Like Jake, the lead singer, is just throwing shit into the crowd, like just dropping people. From their record release show on the Test Press alt cover that we did, it's a shot of a flying Tom just launched into the air, which if you look at the video on YouTube from the record release show, they ended the set by just lobbing all their gear into the crowd. And it was just like, you know, obviously you go to see like, you know, King Nine and fucking Incendiary and all these like, you know, Pain of Truth, like heavy beatdown shows, and like, all right, you may catch a spin kick and all that shit, and you're kind of fighting for your life out there. But there's a whole different energy that comes out with a kind of faster hardcore band that is doing just gnarly shit like that. And I don't know, it was just something that like I haven't found a modern hardcore band that I fucked with, aside from the fact that they're on the label. Like, even if I wasn't working with them, I would be as passionate about it as I would be now. But yeah, it was just like a really, really special release for me. Like, I, funny enough, today I sold the final copy of the pressing, and 250 records gone in like 6 months or something like that, which for like a small DIY band is fucking impressive, man. And you know, I'm very happy that they decided to work with me and continue to work with me, and they got some good shit on the horizon, man. I'm really excited to see what comes from it.
They strike me as a hardworking band just based on some of the tour announcements and show announcement I've seen you put up and share.
Oh yeah, it was yeah, they work really fucking hard, man. I'm very fucking proud of where they are right now.
Yeah, definitely encourage people to check them out. You know, again, I have a long list of people to interview, so I will add them to it maybe one day down the pipeline. I want to talk about this Calloused Minds demo 7-inch. That's the one that you put a lot of work into. I'm reading this now off of your social media. Each one's assembled by hand using a different 7-inch picture disc sleeve, A4 paper cutter. That's the one, right? For the listeners, could you just talk a little bit about the kind of time and you know, work by hand that went into that on every single record, and why you would choose to do that?
Yeah, so I very much, like I said earlier, I'm a record collector and I appreciate the special packaging and all that stuff. A big thing for the label is you're buying a physical product in a digital world, so why are you not making it special? And I feel that way whenever I get, you know, I spend $10 on a home dub tape with a single-sided J card and, you know, maybe a handwritten label on it or something like that. And it's like, all right, like, it's cool. But, you know, what is making me want to pull it off of my shelf and not even play, just like look at it, you know, or just like be like stoked that I own this thing. So I'm always kind of thinking of just cool packaging ideas. I think that kind of goes into the creative aspect of me not being a musician, but still trying to contribute some sort of art to the scene, you know? So for this particular release, what I did was I bought a bunch of old like 7-inch picture sleeves. Like, you know, like back in the day, you would buy like Jump by Van Halen, the 45, and it would just be the artwork on it and all that shit.
And you can
So
get
I found
those,
my.
I'm sorry, you can get those used at thrift stores. You can source those fairly easily, I'm sure, right?
So I found a guy on eBay that was just bulk selling them. So I bought like 150 of them or some shit like that. And there were some good ones in there. There was like the Fat Boys. There was like 80s era Elton John, where he's just got like these terrible outfits on and all that shit. It really is just like a product of the time. But yeah, so what I did was I took those, and then I took the artwork and the track listing, and I used a paper cutter to cut all that out, and I just wheat pasted it, the artwork onto the front, and then the track list and all that stuff on the back. And that was something where, like, in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, it's gonna be this super easy thing. It took me like a couple fucking weeks to do 25 of them, man, just because the front cover was easy. I was just cutting a square. But for the back, my thought process was, okay, I'm just gonna cut another square with the track listing on there. Then I did a test cut of it, and it just looked really awkward. Like, there was a lot of just empty space back there. And I'm like, you know what? I'll just like individually cut out each, like, you know, song title and track name and, you know, credits and all that shit, which once again in my head sounded like an easy thing to do. And until you're there cutting out all 12 or however many song titles it is on top of the credits, on top of the Baby Chico logo, on top of the catalog number and all this shit. And of course it would make sense now to have everything aligned perfectly so you can just do these straight even cuts. But I did not think of that. So I'm there like individually cutting these little things to make sure they're even and all that shit. And oh, and then what I also did was for the 7-inch it's themselves, I didn't put a center label on there. I took a straight razor and I carved the A side and B side on each one of them. So it really ended up being a super, super cool end result. But at the time, I'm like, why the fuck am I doing this? This is the dumbest thing in the world. Well, they sold pretty fast. So,
well, I mean, it speaks to the spirit of that DIY kind of crafty label mindset. Let me ask you this. Are there any other labels out there, more established labels that you see as inspiration for the way they conduct themselves and curate bands and add detail to packaging?
Definitely a lot of the noise stuff. I just bought a tape from Deathbed Tapes recently where I forget the artist, but it was housed in this like VHS case, and then the tape itself is wrapped up in a bandage, and they spiked two nails through the holes of the tape. And it's like little shit like that. Reanimated Miscarriage, who was my buddy Colton that I talked about that did the Penis Geyser tape. And then just stuff like Fusty Cunt. Damien Records, he's not more so, he doesn't do like gimmicks like that, but he puts a lot of effort into the packaging to making sure it all looks cool. And then Youth Attack Records, like I mentioned before, Mark is just... I mean, Mark did the artwork for and the layout for the Giallo 7-inch, and he fucking knocked it out of the park. And his method is like, we'll send him the songs and all that stuff, and he just sends over all these different versions where it's like, oh, okay, this is based off of this song, and this there's this one line in this one song, so I put this little Easter egg over here as a nod to that and all that kind of stuff. Where, you know, that isn't necessarily the packaging, but it's just extra thought going into the layout that isn't just, oh, this is a gore grind album. Let me just go on rotten.com and find the most vile decapitated body I can find and put it on there. Like, the packaging and the layout is a very, very big thing for me.
Yeah, definitely, man. And, well, on the flip, speaking of rotten.com, I think you got plans for Bowel Erosion this year, no?
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry to drop it. I couldn't resist. I couldn't resist, man.
No, you're all good, man. So in the chamber right now, I'm not sure when this is going to go live. So it may be out already. If not, it will be out very soon. Myself and Syrup Head Recordings, we're co-releasing Bowel Erosion set from last year's Barely Breathing on tape. We got some cool packaging stuff planned for that. We have those like big oversized VHS style cases for these, and I made the layout look like an old Alarma mag. You know, like the for those who don't know, those like Mexican like exploitation cartel beheading magazines from back in the day. But the whole thing is the band wanted it to look like it was an old magazine that was like found in a gutter. So I was literally just in my backyard, like scraping it on the floor and like pouring coffee over it and like taking straight razors and cutting it up and all that shit. So we have that. And then I'm doing the tape version for their last EP from last year, Death is the Orgasm of Life. For that, I have just like a standard J card, but I'm doing a special edition where I'm splattering the artwork with my own blood. I have a friend who's a nurse, and she's going to be drawing my blood, and I'm just going to fucking go to town and baptize it with that.
Huh.
And then they just announced a demo that at the time of this recording, it comes out on Sunday, but it will be long out by the time this drops. Let me pull up the title real quick, just because it's gore grind, and they have these ridiculous titles. Let's see. The name of the demo that they just dropped is A Collection of Septic Fumes. And I'm going to be doing the tape version at some point later this year. Kind of the TBD when that's dropping. I have a bunch of other shit on my plate. So that is currently in motion. So it's just kind of like when I'm financially able to drop it. And they have a couple of unannounced splits that I'm going to be helping out with as well.
Okay. Wow, man. Fair enough. Yeah, you know, that was just my cheap shot segue, man. I love Bowel Erosion, and I think at this juncture in the podcast, of the life of this podcast, people should know where I stand with gore grind and the use of gore pictures, man. So I wasn't trying to take a cheap shot there. I just thought it was a fun segue.
Oh, for sure.
But that being said, Barely Breathing 2, you guys ended up doing last summer. Unfortunately, I think that was the one I was on the road for with one of my bands. I think Exsanguinate, or maybe Reeking Aura was on the road for that, so I missed it. Tell us a little bit about that, because now you guys are just kind of getting back in the saddle. You did it once already. How did it go? Was there any hitches? And I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about what... Well, we were talking behind the scenes, and you said you felt that there was a really a growing audience for the event.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so the first year it was myself, John, and the front person of Bowel Erosion, which, if you're listening, you're welcome for not saying your name. the guy from Bowel dropped last year. He just had too much shit on his plate, and just like, hey, I can't help out this year. So it was myself and John only last year. Because we had ample time to prepare for it, I really tried to like make it as organized as possible. There's a lot of work that goes into putting this thing. I'm, like I said before, I'm surprised it went out as well as it did the first year. But, you know, we established a little bit of a timeline of like, oh, okay, we should have the whole lineup confirmed by X date, and we should have, you know, I'm just pulling shit out of my ass here, like we should have a merch spread set up by X date, just like really setting up an established timeline rather than just like, okay, this person's confirmed, let's just announce it type thing. So we were able to just like ping a bunch of bands back and forth, and a big thing for the fest is like doing a combination of bands that are regional to the area that we fuck with as kind of like a Northeastern New York showcase type thing, and also bands that are like, how the fuck did they get this person? So that was the first year, was the first Anal Birth show on top of the first Days of Humanity and Totally Two Wheeler show. And then last year it was Chicago Grind Time doing their first show, or it was supposed to be their first show. I think they played one before that. And then getting Haggis on the bill, getting Suppression, which to my knowledge, I think it was their first time playing Long Island. But we just have a running list. Like we have a list of, no joke, probably 200, 250 bands between the two of us of like, we got to hit these people. We got to hit these people. And it's hard because we keep being like, oh, let's hit this person. And then it's like, fuck, we're at like 90 bands right now. We got to trim this down. So that was something where last year we were kind of the mindset of like, oh, okay, we ended early on the first year, that means we could add more bands. I think there's like 15 bands or like 18 or something ridiculous like that. And very quickly into the day of the fest, we were like, oh, maybe we have too many bands. Haggis didn't go on until like 1 a.m. or something stupid like that. So that was something where it's like, oh, okay, I'm back at my house at 3 or 4 a.m. after like paying all the bands and all that shit. Like, okay, maybe next year less bands. But, yeah, in terms of selling and all that stuff, there wasn't really any incidents like that were negative that happened there. A decent amount of people showed up. I'm pretty sure we ended up selling out if we factored in the people that bought tickets the day of. But it just ran a little long. But aside from that, that was the only real hiccup from last year.
Are you prepared to say if there's going to be a Barely Breathing 3?
Yes, there is going to be a Barely Breathing 3. It's going to be the weekend of August 17th. Last year, one of the things that we noticed was we were booking at the same weekend as This Is Hardcore. So there was a lot of Long Island people, especially last year. It was like Silent Majority, I think Incendiary. Like it was like Long Island Day on the day of our fest. Yo, so it was all right.
The only person that cares about Anal Birth and Silent Majority is Tom Anderer of Buckshot Facelift and Reeking Aura, and those, he's literally the only guy. He's the Venn diagram is him. He's the only one that has Anal Birth and Silent Majority CDs in his collection. I guarantee you.
Well, you know two of them now because you're talking to one. Okay. I literally just got a Silent Majority tattoo. So,
all right, I'm joking. Man. Sometimes I forget that people younger than my generation fuck with Silent Majority.
I love Silent Majority, man.
Oh man,
yeah, I love all that.
I'm not taking anything away from, you know, personally not my style. But I don't take anything away from them or anything. And you know, they were such a big band. You know, when I was in high school, it was like their original run. And I was more of a metalhead and grindcore guy back then, but all my friends were hardcore kids and punk kids. So Silent Majority was on them, and Kill Your Idols were like unescapable when I was in high school, you know. So, all the best to those bands. Not taking anything away from them. I was just in high school. I was way more into Dahmer from Canada. What can I say, man?
Oh, sure. I mean, honestly, same. But
yeah, dude.
You get older and you drop the tough guy persona, and you're like, you know what? It's cool to feel emotions every once in a while.
Yeah, it's fine, man. So, all right, so Barely Breathing 3. That's what it was, man. I took a note on this before. Hold on. You tried to get it right past me like it wasn't a big deal. You're having a nurse friend of yours take blood out of your body, and you're going to splatter it as a art medium. Onto some of these, what is it, a cassette tape, or what format is it?
Yeah, so it's a tape. Okay. The plan right now is to do 100 copies total, and of that 100, I'm doing like 20 or so, where I'm doing this like custom like O card, like just a plain white, like almost like a protective case over it that's made out of cardboard, or like a very, very thick cardstock. Yeah. And I'm having a friend of mine who is a nurse. She's going to be drawing my blood, and with those vials of blood, just kind of like flicking it onto the O cards. And that's like the super limited edition version. I'm going to do the whole, like, you know, numbering them and like stamping the Bowel logo on them and all that shit. And yeah.
I respect it, but I don't like it.
That's something like I'll tell people, they're like, well, you could just use red paint. I'm like, yeah, but where's the fun in that?
No, I gotta respect the integrity of it. I gotta respect that it's a gore grind band, but it's using this like almost grim merchandising tactic from the nether regions of black metal. I I can't knock you for it. Don't necessarily want it behind me in this collection here. I was once in an occult black metal band. I was not an occultist, nor am I now, but I was very open-minded at the time, and I was in a band with a bunch of guys who were into the occult. And a few copies of the CD demo, the guy cut himself in some sort of occult ritual and smeared a bloody, like, thumbprint, or if I remember correctly, like a thumbprint or something into the layout. And I was showing members of one of my other bands, and they one of my more conventional guttural death metal bands, and they didn't really get it, man. I, you know, not my thing, man. But again, you know, I'm not going to knock anyone on their art or whatever, man. That's an extreme thing. So your friend, what did she think about this when you proposed it to her? Your friend who's going to help you with this phlebotomy process.
Yeah, so she is one of my friends who, she's not in this world at all. Like, she's into, like, punk kind of stuff. Like, yeah, I mean, maybe even calling it punk is a little bit of a stretch.
Nurses are usually pretty down. Nurses are usually
cool. Yeah. Yeah, you know, like, the shit that she tells me happens at her job every day, she's just like, all right, cool, whatever. Like, let's do it. You know, she deals with, like, meth heads charging at her and, like, shit on a daily basis, where she's like, okay, cool, I'll stab you and get some blood out of you. Let's do it.
Okay, yeah, it's practice for her, right? Okay, target practice.
Yeah, for sure.
Fair enough. Okay, man. Oh, man. Okay. Fair enough. So, let's see. We talked about the possibility of Barely Breathing 3. We talked about Bowel Erosion. Anything else coming up that you want to just plug or promote that you got on the burner this year coming up, man?
Yeah, I got a couple things in the chamber, actually. I wrote them down because I would definitely forget about them if I didn't. So I'm doing a drop in a couple of weeks, depending on when this airs. Those are the two Bowel Erosion tapes. And I'm also doing the tape version of Cutting Close by the band Electric Bath. They played Barely Breathing 2 last year, and they just blew me the fuck away, man. Like, they have such a great live energy, and the EP that they did from last year, Cutting Close, is just so fucking good. It's just like a nice blend of like grindcore and power violence. There's a little bit of crusty stuff in there. There's even like a weird like emo-y section thrown in, which on paper it doesn't really sound like it would work, but it all just works so fucking well. I have a cool special edition for that one where the name of the band is Electric Bath, so I got all these cheap toasters and I'm putting the tapes in the toasters, and I'm only doing like five or so of those just because toasters are a little more expensive than I thought they would be. But you know, it's just a fun little, like, if you want to drop however much I'm going to charge for them to get a fucking toaster with a tape in it mailed to you, sure, go ahead. But for the most part, it's just a tape. So that's the stuff in the immediate drop that I'm doing. And then on the horizon, some stuff that isn't officially announced yet, but you know, it's probably will be announced by the time this goes live. On May 10th, the new Holy Grinder album, which they play Barely Breathing the first year, and I've since become good buddies with all of them. It's called 10 Desecrations. I'm co-releasing that with No Time over in California. There's going to be a tape version and a vinyl version, but the vinyl version is coming later on in the year just because shit's kind of backed up again. And then around that same time, I'm doing a tape with Failure, which they're kind of like modern. My whole timeline gets all fucked up after COVID. They dropped shit in like 2016, 2017, so I don't really think that's modern anymore. But they do like power violence, fastcore stuff from Italy. I'm booking the first night of their East Coast tour. I'm going to try to do it at Sand City in Lindenhurst. We're still assembling all of that right now, but I'm doing the tape vision of their new, the tape version rather, of their new EP. And then I'm doing a CD with Bastard Noise, which that's fucking huge for me, man. Like,
wow, man.
Eric Wood is just, he's a fucking genius. Like, between all of his projects, like between Neanderthal and PHC and Man is the Bastard and Bastard Noise and Man is the Bastard, Bastard Noise and The Bastard Noise and all the different iterations of Bastard Noise. I'm so fucking happy that he's down to do something because he's just such a big inspiration on me. And then I have a couple other releases that aren't really fully furnished yet. Something I do want to bring up is a newer Long Island band called Death Certificate. They're doing like old school power violence, like late 90s, early 2000s power violence-y stuff. It's Matt Veal, who he is like a big photographer on Long Island. He does Windows Down zine. And then it's just a bunch of other Long Island OGs, like members of Kill Your Idols, members of CR, just like so many just important Long Island and New York bands. And, you know, they're trusting me with a couple things of theirs, and I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, I know Matt's nice with the camera there, but I actually first met him when he was singing for the kind of grind power violence band Scowl, who, yes, obviously there's a different Scowl that enjoys a lot of enthusiastic fans nowadays, but I'm talking about the Scowl that was based more out of like Queens area, I want to say, because I remember calling them a Long Island band once and they corrected me that they were a Queens band. So yeah, Scowl from Queens from several years ago. I think Frank Huang, who films band sets at St. Vitus, was also in that band with Matt, which is interesting because they've both gone on to document the scene visually through the years. Yeah, man, that's really interesting to hear. And I'm actually really glad to, you know, when you say like a new Long Island band, I'm picturing a bunch of like 18-year-old kids. I'm glad it's guys my age. And I'm glad it's somebody I know. I'm glad Matt's coming back to the microphone and being in a band again. He was a great front man, and that'll be very interesting to see.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and Matt's just as big of like a power violence and noise nerd as I am. So like, it's going to be cool to work with someone like that from the island.
We actually played ABC No Rio with them with Buckshot Facelift. And when I got there, they were like at the merch table making their own buttons, like at the table, like making them at the table before the show with like a machine. Like they were totally, and they had some, I still have like a silk screen shirt that they made too, with like kind of like a I think it was supposed to be like a spaz rip of some of a cymbal Spaz used to use, man. Yeah, I'm kind of geeking on that. You mentioned Matt Veal being singing for a band again, because I used to be very into Scowl, his older band, and Buckshot Faceless played a few shows with them. They played a show that John Santiago booked with Iron Lung. I think too.
I remember hearing about that. That was before my time, but I remember John telling me about all that, and he had good things to say about the show.
John, I forget what the discrepancy was, but when that show was over, John was packing up his, maybe he didn't book the show, but he was doing, I think Obnoxious Noise might've booked the show, and John was there with his merch table. And I think the owner or the bartender or whoever this douche, the typical Long Island guy, was trying to kick everyone out. And you could tell that they didn't want the punk kids hanging around after the show type of thing. I think it was a matinee style thing in the afternoon, if I remember correctly. It was at a bar that didn't usually have shows. And I just remember John stood up to this guy and was like, I'm trying to think of the right way to put it, man. But the guy thought he could, like, you know, kind of talk tough to John and back him down and get him out of there. And John wasn't taking shit from this, like, Long Island douchebag. I thought John was going to, like, fight this Long Island guy right out in the parking lot, man. That was funny, man. I'm sorry for going on a tangent, man. You just brought me there talking about Scowl. I have some very good – to the 2012 era when I kind of was having a little bit of a second wind into the – the Long Island scene was great, man. But I'm not going to take up any more of your time with that. Thank you very much, Brian, for all you've shared. And did I cut you off? Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about to plug?
I'm trying to think. Oh, two more releases that I forgot about. Three, technically. I'm reissuing with John again and Tommy from No Time again. Ixius put out an album last year called Compulsive Trance that is really good and really weird. If you like weirdo experimental grind in the vein of like Gasp and all that kind of stuff, you'll fucking love this band and love this LP. We're doing the vinyl version of it later this year. And I'm doing a four-way split that apparently has been in the works for like years now. We're finally giving it the physical treatment. It's Ixius and Sidetracked, who I've worked with both of them previously, and then Fed Ash and Shrivel Up. We are putting it out, a four-way split on LP with Phage Tapes, who Sam normally does noise stuff, but he's starting to branch out into more like hardcore power violence grindcore stuff this year, which I'm very happy about, and Astralands, which is a couple of the Fed Ash guys. And if you remember those old Bovine splits from the 90s, Bovine Records in Wisconsin,
yes,
they would do the splits where it's the power violence band on one side and the sludge band on the other side. I don't want to give anything much more than that away, but we have something like that that is hopefully coming out later this year, if not early next year.
That's interesting, man, because when you talk about Bovine Records, I definitely remember when I was in high school that label having a big impact on me, just the same as Slap-A-Ham Records might have in terms of how I view power violence and all that. Nowadays in death metal, there's like, you know, unarguably a resurgence of the old school sound, the older generation of labels and bands are all getting kind of their just due and are being celebrated for being around back then. Do you see anything similar happening with power violence now that you've brought up Man is the Bastard and Bovine Records?
It's interesting. You know, for a while, the thing to do was just rip off Crossed Out, which, I mean, as you should, Crossed Out is probably top five bands ever of any genre. In my opinion, at least. There are some people, though, who are still doing the whole 90s power violence ripoff thing. Maybe ripoff is a strong word for it, but there was a band called Collapse Skull, which is the Full of Hell guys and a couple other people. They're doing more of a Man is the Bastard influenced power violence stuff. Like, I'm pretty sure it's only bass guitars and it's very Wooden Barns style riffage, all that stuff happening, and like some weirdo noise elements and all that. Yeah, there's a lot of that happening right now, especially with like, bands like Extortion coming back and all that stuff. There is a little bit of a like late 2000s, early 2010s nostalgia thing happening right now. So we are kind of
That make
it feels weird saying
you
nostalgia
have no
with
idea how
that.
old that makes me feel, bro.
Oh my God, yeah. But yeah, it's in a spot now where for a while I was kind of worried it was a little stale, where it was just ripping off Crossed Out and all that stuff, and like just samey kind of Sex Prisoner worship stuff. But there is a little bit more like experimentalness happening right now.
Okay, man. That's definitely something to keep your eye on for listeners who listen. I love death metal. I love gore grind. Sometimes you want something a little different. Sometimes in this day and age, death metal is so surface level that you want to go below the surface of death metal. Sorry, did I say something? I mean, so maybe, just if people are enticed by this conversation, who've never explored power violence and experimental noise and all this other stuff that the subgenres of extreme music that I get wrong in terms of like labeling and everything, man. There's a lot to go there. So the underground is never, you're never fully at the bottom of the wormhole. You know what I mean? That's all I'm trying to say. Brian, thank you so much for your time. I'm gonna give you the opportunity to plug and promote anything else, or bring up anything else I failed to mention. But at this point, I'm going to ask you to recommend one older and one newer release, whether it's an album, an EP, a demo, metal, grind, any genre of music. Just recommend something a little bit from back in the day and something more recent for me and the listeners.
Cool. Yeah. So back in the day, I listened to a bunch of these podcasts. I went down to Florida last week and I just cranked these out on the flight down and flight back. So I've been kind of preparing for this. And like, who the fuck do I want to bring up right now? I've been spinning for older bands. I've been ripping Hypo Christians lately,
Wow.
which, yeah, fucking, for those who don't know, like mid to late 90s, like noise grind stuff. They're from Texas, I believe. Definitely like they have a bit of a cult following, but they don't get as big of a as much love as bands like, Fear of God or like early Anal Cunt do, or like Sore Throat and stuff like that. They do kind of like the noise grind stuff, but with these like pitch shifted, like almost gore grind vocals, like not quite as wet, but definitely pitch altered vocals. So I've been ripping their first two demos like crazy lately. They have other stuff that's more recent too that is pretty good, but my personal favorite are those first two demos that they did. Which, yeah, I saw you get up and look around at your shelf
So
afterwards.
yeah, you saw me creeping, but unfortunately, Adam Rotella now owns my copies of the first two Hypo Christians demos, I
Oh,
believe.
man.
Because I used to correspond and tape trade. I think I tape traded Liquefied Maggots tapes, if I'm not mistaken, for those first two tapes. Francisco Polito is the guy that did that band, and
Fucking phenomenal.
This isn't him. This Ray Rivera was a guy. He did Person Inside of Reagan and Chupacabra back in the day. I associate those two guys because I think they ended up collaborating together down the line, or at least they were very active at the same time. But yeah, Francisco Polito and Hypo Christians, man, that's a great project. It was only a few years ago. I was going through. I hadn't yet constructed this closet and everything. I had all my tapes and CDs and boxes and bags, and I think I traded those two Hypo Christians tapes to Adam for something else, or he just expressed interest in them, and I said, "Here, man, have them," because a lot of this stuff is Adam's to begin with too. That's how we are, kind of with. It's like it's almost like siblings sharing clothes or something with me and Adam with some of these tapes that go back to the 90s when we were getting them in the mail. Yeah, I got up because I thought I might still have them, and I gave them to Adam a while back. But great band, regardless of my confusion right now. I know what you're saying because they had that dirty, kind of raw, crusty grind guitar sound, but the vocals were filthy pitch shifters. Yeah, really interesting band, and they chose to take that anti-Christian angle, which was a little different for the sound and the scene they were in. I mean, you know, it's death metal and grindcore. You know, if it's not a specifically Christian band, most bands, there's, you know, there's going to be upside down cross somewhere, or a blasphemy somewhere, or at least a song that's critical of the church somewhere. But the way Hypocrite Christians made it their whole thing, compared to some of the bands that they appeared on compilations and splits with and were part of the same scene, that kind of set them apart, because it was more about gore back then, you know, for a lot of those bands, or you know, directly political, not necessarily just attacking the church.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, interesting stuff, man. All right, so, and did I get your newer one?
No, not yet. I was trying to think of a newer one. I'm going to cheat and say two, but they both played that Bowel Erosion show that I booked, and I talked about them earlier. It's Putrescine out of Baltimore and Entrail Asphyxiation from the – they got a member in Philly, a member in D.C., and I believe a member in Virginia. Both just some of the better kind of like gore death bands out right now. Like, they got like just enough slams in there without being a slam band. Like, it, listen, like, I call Bowel Erosion hate mosh gore grind. Like, it's just, that's just a stupid name I came up for them. These guys are, they definitely fall into that category of hate mosh gore grind, where they got the pitch shifted vocals and it's just dirty gutturals and all that shit. But, and it's blasting and all that shit, but there is some like internal bleeding riffs and suffocation riffs thrown in there. And people were going apeshit for them at Shakers when they played the record release show. And they both dropped demos last year, and they're both really, really good. And both bands are full of some of the nicest, most genuine people I've ever met in this scene. So, I mean, separate from the fact that they make amazing music, I will support every band that every single one of those people are doing. So check out both of those bands if you haven't already.
What were the two names again?
Putrescine, Putricine, and Entrail Asphyxiation.
Okay. Any band that puts Entrail somewhere in their name, I'm definitely going to give a shot to. I love that. Entrails Massacre from, I think, Germany. That was a great band from back in the day.
Yes. I picked up the Entrails Massacre and Anus Praetor.
Stop!
I think, split.
Stop!
Yeah. I picked up that 7-inch from Looney Tunes when I was like 15 because I saw Anus on there and I'm like, oh, that's funny.
Oh.
And I went home and looked it up. I'm like, yo, this is crazy.
That is one of my first record. Adam gave me that 7-inch. Again, me and Adam just kind of, here you go. We're trading back and forth back in the day. I still have it. All my records are on the other side of the room here, man. Yeah.
The yellow vinyl.
Yeah. And. Yeah. The one side has that weird sketch picture of the kids swimming or whatever, man.
Yeah, wearing like medals.
Yeah, it's so weird, man. It's just funny that you bring that up of all fucking things, man. You're really going back for me here now. I remember, and another friend of mine had bought it at None of the Above Records. I don't know if that's where Adam got his copy. It most likely was. None of the Above Records was a great record store in Center Reach back in the day. But man, wow, that's funny that you bring that up, man. The Anus Praetor, Entrails Massacre split 7-inch. And you got it. If you're going to check out Entrails Massacre, check out that release, because some of their stuff I prefer over others. I'll just leave it there.
Oh, for sure. They're definitely a quantity band as well. If I'm remembering correctly, didn't they have some weird like techno album or some shit like that? Or
it could be. They had some album that was a little bit more like mid grind hardcore that wasn't for me, and after that I stopped, you know, really looking for all their stuff. I stayed in the
it
past.
May have been the label that put out some weird techno shit. I remember there was some weird techno collection when I was doing my like deep dive into them, where I'm like, how is this affiliated with Entrail Massacre?
I wouldn't put it past them, you know what I mean? Hey, the guy from Beherit got away with it, why can't the gore grind bands do it, you know what I mean?
That's very true.
All right, man. Brian, is there anything else that you wanted to plug or promote that you didn't get the opportunity to?
Trying to think. We covered most of it. I'm going to be repressing the Calloused Minds demo this year. So I've had a couple people reach out about it. We did a CR rip for Bailey
Nice.
Bailey 2 last year.
Nice.
And a couple of those guys were asking about it. So, you know, if you haven't heard of CR, check them out. They're fucking phenomenal. Staten Island, I think. Hardcore power violence kind of stuff.
Pretty sure. Yeah, I want to say Staten Island. I'm pretty sure that's the thing. They came up. We did an episode a while back I think we called it like In Search of Long Island Hardcore or something like that. Even though they were a Staten Island band, we were talking about a lot of those screechy older bands from the 90s. So they came up in the conversation. But yeah, great band. Brian, it's been great having you on here. I'm sorry, did I cut you off? Was there anything else besides that?
No, that's pretty much all I can think of right now.
Okay, man. Fair enough. And we encourage the listeners to check out Baby Chico Records. I know you got a Bandcamp and you also have a Big Cartel.
Yeah. So we, right now the Bandcamp is more archival. I just reached a point with the Bandcamp. I don't want to be too inside baseball about it, but when you sell physical stuff on Bandcamp, rather than just taking a percentage of your sale, like they'll just incur a debt on you. And then like every once in a while you'll sell something and then you just won't get paid for it. Or they'll take like a pretty hefty percentage of it and be like, well, we didn't remove the percentage from these past few, so we're just tacking onto this one release. And it just got like way too annoying to deal with, because like I would mail shit out like overseas to people and they'll be like, oh, hey, we're just going to hit you with these crazy fees. And like you're paying out of pocket to ship this thing to Nuremberg. So it's like I just got sick of dealing with that. So the Bandcamp is more just archival. I put up everything that I put out there and I just redirect to the band's Bandcamp. And to buy the physicals, you go through the Big Cartel.
Ew, on the Bandcamp thing, dude.
And there's just a bunch of other shit where like when that like marketing firm or whoever the fuck bought them out, bought them, or, like they laid off a whole bunch of people. And it was just like, it just wasn't looking good. Like they've kind of leveled off since then, but I just was like, listen, I've worked for enough failing companies to know that this is heading in that direction. So I just kind of jumped ship early. But yeah, if you want to check out the releases before you buy them, you can go on our Bandcamp. And then when you want to buy the physicals, you can go to babychicorecords.bigcartel. Or if you just want to buy the digital versions, I link the band's Bandcamps directly on each release.
All right, man. Yeah, and we encourage the listeners to check out all the music that we discussed, all the music and noise that we discussed this episode, and to keep your eyes peeled on social media for the next Baby Chico Records release and the next Barely Breathing Fest when you guys are ready to announce that, man. Thank you so much, Brian. Any final messages for followers of your label and listeners of the podcast?
Listen to everything that Slap-A-Ham Records put out and look at the artwork and the layout and all that shit, and you will understand my mission statement as a label.
Fair enough, man. Crack the books, guys. Brian, thank you so much, man.
Yo, thanks for having me, man.
To Baby Chico Records. Please check out that label. Check out everything that we just discussed and all the music we talked about. But we're not done talking about music. Tom, you're still with me, right?
I am. I'm still here.
You brought something very interesting to my attention. I'm going to guess, as the co-host, I'm going to give you the lead and let you go first. But I just want to say, I felt like we hit a little bit of a synchronicity. There's something about the two bands we recommended that I think hits a similar vibe in some ways. I don't know. Go ahead.
Yeah, man. So this band that brought in, I actually think I brought them in before, actually. I brought in their album A Sire to the Ghouls of Lunacy, and the band is Veilburner, before I blow past that. So I remember really enjoying Sires to the Ghoul. That was tight. And since then, they've released two more full lengths, and this new one I brought in, it's a self-title, except they took all the vowels out of it, like some kind of San Francisco startup. This album is fantastic. It's a real trip of a songwriting kind of song album. My gosh. The whole thing's never really sits in one place. It is a total journey You can tell someone has the main writer behind it, I guess. Let me see. I'm looking at the Metallum. They're using these names. Mephisto Deleterio. Okay, so he does all the instruments. Well, hats off to you, sir. Songwriting is very cool. It has some interesting movements throughout. It's experimental in its truest form. It is definitely blackened death metal, but taken to the next step in a lot of ways. There's synth work in it, the way the guitars sometimes are mixed throughout, the leads, they're very atypical, but it works. It's thoughtful. So big shout out to Veilburner for putting out this wild album. Will, what did you think of this one?
Wild is the word. In the little PR write-up for, I'm going to say this, I'm referencing other bands first and foremost because this style, this was a great album, very interesting, but this style is not necessarily my wheelhouse. But I do have bandmates and friends in the scene who are a lot more attuned to this type of thing, and I can understand why you might put this in the same PR write-up saying for fans of bands like Dodheimsgard and Borknagar, and these kind of abstract, strange takes on the black metal genre or shoot-offs of the black metal genre, because I feel like this is black metal in a way.
Yeah.
But they're doing some really interesting stuff in terms of technique and writing, and they're bringing different elements of metal together. Like, this is a really interesting, unique album, but it's solidly metal. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like a prog album or a patchwork genre melting album. No. It's a really interesting take on metal, you know?
Yeah, definitely metal all the way through, but there are some sounds in there that are not metal. Never once does it compromise in its brutality or delivery in those terms. So, yeah, check out the album Veilburner, VLBRNR, by Veilburner. Veilburner, their self-titled minus vowels on Transcending Obscurity Records. Good label.
All right. So, Tom, remember I said that I feel like there's a certain parallels, not necessarily in the way the music even like sounds, but I feel like both of these bands are kind of doing their own interesting take on blackened death metal in a way, or black metal with that incorporates elements of death metal. I want to talk about Aurora Borealis, which is a band from Waldorf, Maryland. I associate it a lot with Florida death metal because of a couple of session members who people associate with Florida death metal have been through it. Derek Roddy and Tim Young, most notably, have been through the band on several releases. But Ron Vento of Imperial Crystalline Entombment, which is a band that's kind of made the rounds recently with a new album. It's kind of like the main guy doing the vocals, guitars, sometimes programming and bass for this band all through its many full-length albums that it's had over the years. There was one even in 2022, which I feel like I talked about, or maybe one of the other ones. I definitely talked about one of the more recent albums on this podcast a few years ago. But today I want to talk about Mansions of Eternity, the debut EP from 1996 by Aurora Borealis. This came out on Night Sky Productions in 1996. Five songs, two of which are Lestrange's Nosferatu covers, which was the band main man Ron Vento was in before he started Aurora Borealis. This is really... also, but notably, the drummers Tony Laureano, who's played with Megadeth, Mayhem, and Brujeria. So, this is, to me, this is like black. You know, when I read about the origins of black metal and what people consider black metal, there are people who reference old Morbid Angel and reference Altars of Madness and Blessed Are the Sick and Covenant as, in their own way, black metal. That's a school of thought out there. And this Aurora Borealis debut EP brings to mind early Morbid Angel, maybe even Nile, in certain ways. This is it's really cool, old school Florida death metal. And, you know, stylistically, I guess you could say. I don't want to get too caught up on regions and things like that because I'm just trying to give a frame of reference for the listeners. So I hopefully they will check this out because this is a band with an abundance of material and a huge catalog. And this is where you'd want to start, the Mansions of Eternity. And they also have always had a very interesting take on their lyrical and subject matter, kind of a interest in the unknown as opposed to science fiction. You know what I mean? Maybe you know, looking into you know, the unexplainable.
Yeah,
as
I've been listening to a lot of Art Bell recently. So yes,
yeah, as you may, yeah. So you know, you already know where we're going with this. So yeah, and I just want to say, like, this band is its own little anomaly, maybe its own entity out there. They always kind of existed over the years, putting out material low key. Never turned into a huge touring act that played around, you know, lots of places or was on a huge label, but always kept a certain level of quality to the songwriting, to the production, and a certain level of originality and a unique vision. So just a really cool, I'm just going to say, kind of old school traditional death metal band that showcases musicianship. And in some ways is really, you know, also has a foot in the black metal world, man. This is really cool death, like mysterious kind of old-fashioned death metal with killer musicianship. And I'm going to toss it up to you, Tom, and get your input if you had a chance to check it out.
Yeah, thanks for throwing this my way. I listened to this EP once, and I, you know, like you said, it's very, has the mind of musicians presenting itself, but it's never that flashy, which is nice. There's nothing too flashy about it, just like solid musicianship. Honestly, I'm a noob on this. I never even heard of Aurora Borealis. First time. And so I'm excited to dive in. This is pretty sick.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm just, like I said, I'm just kind of dropping this here as a maybe a stepping stone for the listeners, because you can check them out on Bandcamp or wherever. This band has tons of albums. All kind of spearheaded by Ron Vento, the main guy, another artist we should probably get on the podcast eventually. And it's just a cool, you know, some bands just feel like their own world that you can, delve into, and you can kind of binge listen to a band and, you know, kind of track their progression through the years. This is a great catalog if you're someone who likes to do that as a listener. And I think a lot of the Heavy Hole listeners are kind of that frame of mind too, as I am. So, Tom, any final thoughts before we throw this their way?
No, I just I'm going to do that deep dive on this band.
Fair enough, and I hope some of the listeners do too, because I have, and it's an enjoyable one.
Very black metal.
Really great combination of the black metal that was going on in that era of the 90s, but I felt like it wasn't disingenuous. They weren't trying to do true Norwegian black metal from Maryland. They were doing their own take on it and being honest about their death metal roots and death metal musicianship, which I think is great, man. It's very kind of true to their culture and true to what they were trying to accomplish, as opposed to some bands which I think I think maybe there were some American bands in the 90s that were that just saw the black metal articles, you know, in magazines and just like really dove headfirst into trying to appeal to that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, the Norwegians also took a lot of shots at American music. So, you know, when you I just actually ran across that, you know, that infamous Mayhem live album with Dead with his brain shot out on the cover. And the inside of it, like, they specifically call out, like, Deicide for being a shitty band.
And yeah, it's like, I know that, like, people wearing sweatpants in death metal bands was a very contentious issue.
Yeah, so, I don't know. You can't, yeah, they're dishing it out. So what do they expect?
Yeah, I read the Lords of Chaos book when it first came out. I know that that's, you know, there people have their share of opinions about that. That can be a polarizing book. But all I'm saying, I remember there was quotes about how those some of those black metal guys didn't like American bands that wore sweatpants and ate hamburgers. I feel directly attacked. I am the meme of the American death metal band who wears sweatpants and eats hamburgers, dude. I am the walking meme, but it's a gift, as I always say.
It is
for
a
everybody
gift.
Out there.
It's a good thing that you do.
Yeah.
I'm glad I can call you a friend. Because I don't want to know what some of those guys do, you know?
Somebody's got to. Who are you going to call? All right. I appreciate those recommendos. Though, look, all kidding aside, I hope people check out those bands and go down the wormhole on both of them. And also check out the band Wormhole. Because they always come up when I make that reference. What else going on? So Tom's cabinets are painted. He's good. My dog's great. Everybody's doing okay up here. We're listening to sick music. Baby Chico Records, support Baby Chico Records. Look out for that Barely Breathing Fest and everything else that we discussed in the interview. Tom, are you all right?
Is everything you all right? I'm doing good. I just want to throw out there one of the venues I have near me, also named Wormhole. And that's where Morbicon will be playing in, March 26th? So I will be there. I will be getting drunk at Wormhole.
Beautiful. Morbicon. I want to see Morbicon live. We were talking about Cannabis Corpse before.
Right.
Morbicon, another band that I hear has a very illustrated live performance.
I actually haven't even checked it. I mean, I did a bunch of the work on that album with the synths and stuff, and I'm working with them now. What's up?
Are you allowed to say that?
I'm credited in the album.
You worked your legal magic? Okay, good.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, it's gonna be exciting. Go down there and be like, yeah, that's my boys. I'll be that guy.
Yeah, that's oh boy. Yeah, the like act like you don't know what metal is. You're just those guys' friend from work.
Yeah, show up. Yeah, we work for the same. Point of sales company.
Those friends are always great. The work friends that show up to your death metal show and just kind of like laugh at your entire subculture, you know.
And have a couple of beers. Talked about this a while ago. I don't like wear metal gear to shows ever.
Yeah,
I usually wear like an old Navy blank, so I feel like that guy. It feels fun to be like that guy.
It's always good to just have an excuse. You know, you can say, I didn't even know there was a show here. You know what I mean? Like if something jumps off, the cops come or something. You know what I mean? This is my bar. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know what these
I just can't. Are. Actually, funny story. I was just talking to a guy who used to work at that place, Wormhole. And they get all kinds of weird acts there. And actually, Dave Chappelle came unexpectedly to Wormhole. And it was... I think they were throwing a comedy night and they didn't have his name on it. It's a small venue. It does like 200 people. And it was some comedy night and whoever was in there when Dave got in, like you were in the show and he was just like working out material and smoking cigarettes as he does. And my buddy Zach, he was working the bar that night and he just kept running shots over to him. And That'll be pretty cool. Morbican and Dave Chappelle sharing a stage.
Imagine that was just a show. Imagine they were to like Morbican plays and then Dave Chappelle just, you know, comes out and does his thing. That'd
be so sick.
Wow. I mean, the idea of comedians and bands touring, there's gotta be a plot. I don't know if those are the two. I don't know if those are the two acts that are going to go together, like, you know, yeah. I was going to say vanilla and chocolate ice cream, but that was awkward right there. But peanut butter and jelly. Peanut butter and jelly is the metaphor I want. Those are the two that are going to go together, like peanut butter and jelly. I don't know if those are the two, but there's definitely comedians and bands. That's an interesting mishmash. Maybe we could get that going.
Yeah, we'll try
magicians.
That.
Magicians. I don't know.
We can sink some money into that.
Yeah. 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 You know how we were saying about, like, just going incognito at shows?
Yeah.
That's the whole reason I joined Exsanguinated, because if anything goes a little sour at those shows, I could just say, like, these guys are my, like, the one guy's my nephew. You know, I just came to watch the band. I don't know what anyone's doing here. I just, you know, I'm trying to support the kid or something.
Right,
you know?
Right. Just in case some wild protest comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, because I'm at least a decade older than every member of Exsanguinated. Come on, you can't. It's a gift to you people out there. Use it. Make fun of me. No, self-deprecating humor. Very I want nice. It. PR. All promotion is good promotion, kid. If they're talking about you, it means you're relevant. I'm like a bitter old radio jockey right now. You know, if they're talking about you, you're relevant, kid.
Look at
this book I got.
I've always said you got the voice for it. That's how we started the show, anyway. So if you want to vent about those things, you have the platform.
Look at that! Look at that shot of a young Rush Limbaugh.
Oh my gosh!
On this book I found at the thrift store, "Hot Air, All Talk, All the Time," and it's got pictures of Larry King, and Howard Stern, but also like Bill Clinton and Pat Buchanan. I can't wait to read this book. It's gonna be interesting, man.
That's gonna be and then the be podcast. A strange one. Hey, if it helps, you're actually using the same microphone that Rush Limbaugh uses, or used.
The same exact one?
Same exact one. That's the go. If you peel off that tan outer coat, it turns gold like his.
No, I'm going to unscrew it and look for drugs in that case, allegedly.
Yeah, dude.
Whoa. Oh, boy. All right. We went out on a limb on this Heavy Hole podcast episode. It's all right, though. That's what Tom's here for, man, to push the boundaries.
That's right.
Big shout out to Justin while we're at it here, and all the other co-hosts, all of our listeners. We appreciate you guys. And again, I appreciate Baby Chico Records. Please support Baby Chico Records and all the shows, all the releases, everything we talked about this evening. HeavyHolePodcast@gmail.com. If you want to hit us up with your own recommendations, complaints, anything else, the voicemail number should be in the description wherever you're listening to this. Hit us up with a voicemail, Tony Baldone or otherwise. We're on Patreon with the little bonus clips here and there. What else? Did I forget something, buddy boy?
No, not really. Oh, well, if you want to write an email to us, that might be a preferred format of contacting us. That's something that we could read on air. So heavyholepodcast@gmail.com.
True.
Hit us up.
True. Like write it on a piece of paper and script, and then take a photograph of it and develop it old school style, and then scan it, then fax it to us.
Page max, though.
Yeah, one page. That's a good name for a noise project, one page max.
Yeah, that's... His name is Max, and he's here to give you the page.
Or maybe you just reverse it, and I'll flip it on you. It could be like Max Page 1.